And our final talk in this session is Transforming Braille, and I'd like to welcome Neil Heslop up to the stand. Now, you're listed, Neil, as RNIB and Orbit Technologies, but I know you're also now with the Leonard Cheshire Disability as CEO, so welcome, and it's great to have you here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Campbell. Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's very nice to be back in Glasgow. Thank you for the invitation back, and I should probably just explain a little bit. I guess all of us are wrestling with it's a fast-moving world, and one aspect of that fast-moving world is when the programme was put together, I was with RNIB, and I'm here to talk about a particular initiative that RNIB led, which was a global consortium to develop some affordable, refreshable Braille. However, as Campbell said, I've recently left RNIB and started a new role as Chief Executive of Leonard Cheshire Disability. And for those of you who don't know, Leonard, just take 30 seconds, Leonard Cheshire is a UK and international pan-disability organisation, and what it's known for in the UK is predominantly its support of about 6,500 people with a variety of disability in about 180 social care and supported living settings. But we also work across the UK with about 5,000 people of different disabilities, supporting them both educationally and with some of their aspirations around employment. And probably, as I found out a little earlier, what is much less understood is we also have operations in 14 countries across Africa and Asia, and through a federation of another 40 organizations, we're in 55 countries, where we work in supporting people with disability through educational attainment and achieving economic independence. So that's Leonard Cheshire, but I'm not here to talk about that. So I will talk about what I am here to talk about. And I guess in the sessions before me and continuing, there are a few recurrent themes that underpinned RNIB's philosophy to supporting people with sight loss in the digital world. And I think in that changing world, as we all know, things politically and economically and socially and technology-wise, the external environment is changing dramatically. And the role of all organizations, be they for-profit organization, government organization, agencies like RNIB, that creates new demands on how to support the people that RNIB is here to serve. And all of those organizations are having to partner and innovate in very new and different ways. And I think as we've heard through the course of this afternoon's session, a partnership around content availability, and you heard about Benetech and RNIB coming together around a global platform to support the RNIB Bookshare service. That's all about accelerating the availability of content. You heard Peter talk about a partnership with O2, where O2 are bringing together the connectivity that provides opportunities to access that improved content. You will also hear in this conference from the likes of Apple and Samsung and Microsoft, where organizations, mainstream device providers, are working very, very hard to improve the accessibility of mainstream devices. And you heard from Emma and Joe from HarperCollins about the publishing industry's efforts. And I guess for the user, the customer at the end of the day, the blind or partially sighted individual, all of those things play a part in enabling people to get access to the same content at the same time on the same terms as their sighted peers. And that's the nirvana that all this partnership and innovation is targeted at supporting. But also, what you will see is, while we talk about mainstream technology, hardware technology becoming more accessible, there has been and will remain a place for very specialist assistive technology. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about in terms of the Orbit Reader and the Transforming Braille initiative. As all of us who are blind and Brailleists know, Braille is fundamentally critical for people with sight loss. The statistics are absolutely unequivocal in terms of educational attainment and in terms of employment. The role of Braille is fundamental, and in a new digital world, preserving and extending the availability of Braille as a tool of choice is critically important. And all of the agencies around the world, like RNIB, have been concerned over time at the diminution in availability of Braille skills. And the market, in terms of our education systems, in terms of mainstream technology, has pushed Braille literacy and Braille adoption and Braille availability a little bit to the bottom of the pile. And because of its criticality, agencies such as RNIB were determined to find a way to break down the barriers that were leading to that. And probably the single most important of those barriers was the affordability of refreshable Braille technology. Now, 3 years ago, we understood that problem and embarked upon a strategy as to how organisations like RNIB could collaborate with sister organisations across the world in changing that market failure, such that a refreshable Braille display did not cost £3,000, that perhaps we could get it to £300. Create some way to dramatically change the availability, and in so doing, provide the opportunity to preserve Braille in the long run, given its criticality for educational attainment and employment. I vividly remember when I joined RNIB in the spring of 2013, one of the first things I did was attend a meeting on the east coast of the US, and which was a World Blind Union technology advisory group, where organisations such as Vision Australia and Royal Blind Foundation New Zealand and National Federation of the Blind and Perkins School for the Blind and all of the organisations from around the world who were grappling with this problem had the same interest. But all of us individually were struggling to find a way to actually make a breakthrough. And I vividly remember watching all of these individuals wrestling with all the normal politics that goes on in the blind world between these organizations, where people want to find a way to come together to make breakthroughs, but have restricted resources and particular governance and so forth. So I found myself doing a little bit of a... I felt like I was in the UN, where we broke everyone up into different groups in different parts of the building to see whether we could actually find a way to do something completely different. And what emerged from those conversations was that all of those organisations had that common interest, but we needed to create a different vehicle in order to turn the talk and the rhetoric into a collaboration that actually delivered and did something different. And what was proposed was that we did something quite radical and different, and that was to set up a limited liability company in North America whose share capital was funded by these blindness organizations. And we agreed a different governance and a different approach, actually very akin to what you would see in Silicon Valley when you were trying to go through a startup phase to take an idea and bring it to market. And a lot of the techniques that we used in creating that company were taken straight from technology startup land, which was very different and anathema for organizations like RNIB and NFB and all these organizations around the world. But what it did was it created a tightness of governance where we could conduct a technology review. We engage that company that each of the organizations took a shareholding in, established commercial relationships with an industrial design consultancy based in the US to do a complete technology review of all emerging technologies across the world. And there were probably about 60 of them, where we strongly evaluated what different technology innovations had to offer in order to make a fundamental change to the price and availability of refreshable braille display. That took us probably the best part of a year to analyze all of those 60 projects, shrink it down to two or three different technologies that we felt had potential. And then we ran a fairly rigorous procurement exercise, again, taken straight from the commercial sector, to work with potential technology companies to help us take that idea and develop it. And it was very interesting watching all of the representatives from these organizations evolve in terms of the way that they work together through the course of that process, because it was new and different for everybody. And at each stage, we had to collectively go and make the case to beg, borrow, and steal more money from our host organizations. Initially $50,000, and then $250,000, and eventually all the way up to the best part of $1.5 million. And it was because of the commitment that the principals from the organization had to winning support from their host organizations that we were able to bring forward those resources, go through that procurement process, partner with an American Indian technology company called Orbit Research in order to develop and then deliver the specification that we had all jointly agreed as shareholders within the Transforming Braille Group LLC, which is the name of the company. The way it worked was there were three prime partners, RNIB, National Federation of the Blind, American Printing House for the Blind, who each took a 20% stake in that company. And then there were about 10 other organizations who took a smaller stake, Perkins School, Vision Australia, Royal National Foundation, New Zealand, CNIB, and AVH, and a number of others. And people's shareholding determined their voting rights and actually the degree to which their voice was heard in decision making. And that governance discipline actually helped us push decision making through. So having fixed on the partnership with Orbit Research, having gone through a technology evaluation, we then developed the technology, ran field trials across 27 countries, tested, and here it is. So what I have here, what I'm holding up here is the Orbit Reader 20, which is a fairly basic small device, which goes on sale next month. It goes on sale next month. It is the beginning of a whole series of product opportunities. But as soon as it does go on sale, it will increase choice dramatically for people. It won't be right for everybody. It will be within the reach of the developing world in a way that refreshable braille isn't in any meaningful way today. I think in the developed world, it will give people the choices to at a much, much lower cost. It is not a high-end braille display. It's not, it has, you're not going to get everything that you would get for £3,000 for £300 or £400. But RNIB. RNIB and all of the organizations that form the Transforming Braille Group really see it as a first and critical step to accelerating the availability and adoption of affordable refreshable braille. And I guess I would probably just conclude my session by really drawing out, I think, two or three important insights from everything that you've heard in the first session of the conference. I think the opportunities for reading and education and employment, if you are blind or partially sighted, today are better than they've ever been, ever. That doesn't mean to say that there aren't massive problems, because clearly there are. I think the message that I would like to leave you, however, is that technology, society, has reached a point where the barriers don't have to be there anymore. It's not about some kind of theoretical highfalutin stuff. You know, yeah, you haven't got to build a rocket and go to the moon anymore in fixing these problems. The challenge is to leverage, to bring together that world of content with that world of connectivity, with mainstream hardware and with specialist hardware, and with the skills and confidence for the individuals to make the most of the potential. And in order to do that, all of the organisations involved need to partner and innovate and do things differently, because they all have a role, but it either all works or none of it works. And certainly on behalf of me in my old role at RNOB, when you look at the partnerships that you've heard about with O2 and with Apple and Google and Microsoft and Amazon and the publishing organizations, I there is a real opportunity. And I think there is a real desire from many, many more organisations from across society, be they technology companies, be they publishers, be they educators, be they government, to find clever and creative ways to make a difference for the people that matter in all of this. Thank you very much.
We've got time for one quick question, if Neil's up for that. We've got one at the very top there. One question from the lady there at the back.
Hello, my name's Sheila Foster from Near Leeds. And it's a two-way question, really. Well, it might even be three. I do get emails and information from the Bristol Braillists about the Canute, Canute,
yep,
which again is the affordable that, yep, they're right. My question is that, are they a different organisation with a different doodah? And the second question is, when you say it's on sale next month, the the Braille, the refresher Braille display. I don't think I'm going to like the answer to this one, but will it be in UEB or SEB? Because everybody I know do not want UEB, and I think you'll probably find that your sales are a lot less.
Well, I think there's. Let me deal with the first question first, and then come back to that. I think the Ed Rogers is the guy who's behind Bristol Braille Technologies and the Canute. You know, I said the Transforming Braille group did an evaluation of the different forms of technology, and we looked at all at 60. One of those was Ed's project, which we think is a terrific part of the whole ecosystem. By the way. We took the decision in the Transforming Braille group that particular technology and the approach to development was not going to be scalable economically, and that we sort of stayed in touch with Ed and wished him well and support it, because his whole philosophy about seeking to develop that is one that I think all of us who care in this field would feel very supportive of. I'm a little bit out of date with them. I last spent time with Ed in May. The biggest challenge for those guys was getting the funding and sustainability to continually invest in the product to make it scalable and distributable. They're following a very much more sort of community-based ethos, and I really hope it works. I really hope it works. I think RNIB is technology and device agnostic. All RNIB cares about is more people having more choice. I really hope it works out well. I just think it's a different approach. They're at a different stage in the technology development cycle, and there are some challenges for Ed and his colleagues about the financial resources at their disposal. In terms of your observation about the great UEB-SEB debate, I think it's really important to distinguish between Braille and its production and how it's represented via code. So the issue that you're talking about is less germane to the physical display. What you're talking about is the decision that content producers make in terms of their availability of content for different codes. So there is nothing that prevents UEB or SEB content being displayed on a device like this. There is no obstacle to that. I think the practical reality, though, is about where individual content producers, where they are in terms of them making their own decisions about their production of content. And I know it's a massively, I as a blind person, I was educated under SEB, and frankly, I didn't want to change, bluntly. But I think the way that I personally rationalised it was when you look at all of the research, when you look at the data, me as a 51-year-old blind guy brought up in SEB, being asked to make the sacrifice of learning a transition to UEB. And I did think of it, I can say this now that I'm not no longer at RNIB, I did think it was a right royal pain and a bit of a sacrifice. But the thing that persuaded me was when someone said, if you're not willing to do that, are you happy that the likely consequence of that is that in 50 years' time, blind kids won't have the choice. They won't have Braille. So that's what persuaded me personally. And it's an emotive argument. But for me, I think it's all of the data, it makes it very, very compelling.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you.